Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Excited to be here with you, as always, this Wednesday, November 12th. It's a little bit chilly out there, Matt Neely.
Just a bit.
47 degrees. I was getting on the way over here this morning.
So, goodness.
Yeah, those are great days of fall are almost over here for us, huh? Kind of shocking to think that that 2 or 3 weeks we get a fall is already gone.
And the foil littered around the bus stop is changing color. I mean, it's crazy.
It's a darker amber and reddish in color over there. It's just beautiful. I got to see a few of those on the way down here as well.
People broken out their Christmas hatchets, the whole bit. So yeah. It's nice.
Without a doubt. But, exciting news going on in the old Pueblo over here. Our government shutdown looking like it's coming to an end.
The election's
today. Yeah, I think that's going to be great news. It looks like even Adelita Grijalva, they've announced that she's going to be sworn in today at approximately 2 p.m. Arizona time. So for the first time in over 2 years, the constituency of CD7 will have some representation out here. The press has been saying for the first time in 7 weeks, but I really do think it's been the better portion of a presidential administration almost since we've had representation in CD7.
You are absolutely correct.
And so I'm kind of glad to see that one come to an end over here, as it's really been a lightning rod, a big talking point for local politicians who've got to go out and say that somehow she represented the 218th vote, that this was going to be the Epstein files in some capacity. Release the Epstein files. Get this over with. It's going to be a dud. If there had been something there, it would have been released a long time ago against
before
our current
Trump's
president.
Election.
Correct. Right? I'm no expert.
Sorry, re-election.
I'm just thinking that this one is just over the top and fabricated. But it is interesting that they are getting her sworn in right before the House votes on, taking down this shutdown, as they should. She won the election fair and square. And so it's great to just have that one be done with and no longer be a talking point in local politics in any way, shape, or form.
Even though Gallego and Kelly were a big part of the reason she couldn't be sworn. If it was, in fact, due to the government shutdown, they were two of the four holdouts.
Without a doubt. So. And Southern Arizona, of course, feels that one very hard. Like as we've got, a tremendous federal government force in Southern Arizona with both, of course, our military and the Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. And, of course, just the large amount of government jobs we have down here. Heck, our economy pretty much depends on government jobs in Southern Arizona. If you think about it, we are a government job town. And I don't like to think that way, as a small-time employer over here, an entrepreneur. But when you look at our biggest businesses in town, what do we got? Raytheon, basically government. The University of Arizona, absolutely government. The Pima County government is one of our other biggest suppliers.
It's got government in the name.
Right. Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, also government. I mean, I think Walmart is like literally our next biggest employer in Southern Arizona. So shutdowns like this do affect us in a very negative manner. We, of course, got to see this weekend a number of restaurants contributing food to both our veterans and to government employees who were affected by the shutdown. And I think we'll probably see that one come to an end here. I was really disappointed to see a murder in a restaurant on Monday in Tucson. Now, huh? Did you see that at the McDonald's on Ironwood out there? I guess there was some sort of domestic dispute, and a gentleman was shot and was chased inside of McDonald's. And basically executed inside of this West Side McDonald's in the Ironwood Hills neighborhood. Like, pretty shocking and horrible turn of events for obviously the people involved in the shooting, but also for the staff members. I mean, imagine just going through that and having something that was completely unrelated to you end up being a murder inside of your establishment. Like, what an awful turn of events to have happen. It kind of reminded me of what happened years ago at Firebirds inside Cantata, if you recall. And it took that establishment a number of years to sort of recover from that particular murder-suicide that had happened inside of Firebirds. And again, this had nothing to do with the restaurant. They didn't choose Firebirds because it was a great place to have a murder-suicide any more than they looked at the McDonald's extra value menu and decided that this was going to be the absolute great place to commit a homicide. Mm-hmm. But the lives that are affected by this, not just in terms of the murder, but just the employees, to have to witness and go through something like that, a real terrible tragedy.
Yes.
And the violence trends just continues in the old Pueblo. It really scares me, Matt. I just see this sort of negligent violence continuing over and over again. Every day, it seems that there's some updated shooting news on the south and west side of Tucson.
Kind of seems like we're in a lawless era right now.
It certainly does. Yeah. I just feel like we're often going backwards here in the old Pueblo, and it worries me. Speaking of going backwards, of course, we had an election last week, and we're getting the sort of post-mortem results of that one. It looks as if there were 114,569 ballots cast out of 393,000 registered voters. And so, like, we got a Janet Wittenbraker getting losing by 35.8% of the vote. She got 32% as a final number, and Jay Tolkoff got 32.6% of the vote. And so both Republican candidates basically underperforming on even what the Republican voter registration would suggest. So, like, the city of Tucson was not only not looking for change, they were voting for more of the same thing, and really a decided turn for the left over here. It was yet another low voter turnout in the city of Tucson, and kind of a scary thing to think that how just little civic participation we have in local politics. Nobody seems to get excited about the things that actually make the biggest deal in all of our lives.
Yeah.
Tucson kind of continues to make national news in the last week and some change. So you saw both on the Today Show last Wednesday, right after our show, Savannah Guthrie had an 8-minute piece where they talked about Tucson and it made the news. I guess Visit Tucson actually paid for that piece.
This was previewed on the Morning Voice a couple weeks ago when Tom had somebody from Visit Tucson on that was part of the rebranding. It's about 3 weeks ago, and he talked about how they had arranged for Savannah Guthrie to come out and do a feature for Today. So, yeah, I mean, that was actually talked about on the Morning Voice quite a while ago. And it was a PR. It was a PR move. And, you know, they'll get some eyeballs on Tucson. You know, you go I didn't realize 8 minutes, but I mean, certainly social media locally blew up with everybody's, oh, I saw Savannah Guthrie. And so, getting that much kind of airtime or whatever you call it, earned media or whatever on a national network news program. You know, that's, I guess, good for Tucson, but it wasn't just accidental that she showed up here and wanted to do a feature.
Without a doubt, this was a paid puff piece in some degree, but hey, all press, as I always say, is good press, unless right. You were on Kitchen Cops out there. Like, it is good to get on the news and get some eyeballs on Tucson. And Tucson made national news again this morning, if you take a look at the New York Post. It turns out that former New York mayor, Bill de Blasio, who had been in a 10-month relationship with locally based liberal activist Nomaki Kantz was caught having an affair, if you could call it an affair, because they were just boyfriend, girlfriend, uh-huh, with another Tucsonan, South Tucson Mayor Roxana Valenzuela, who happens to be, I believe, on the RTA board as well, too. And so Bill de Blasio busted in a love triangle with a pair of Tucsonans, Matt.
Mel Tillis, send me down to Tucson. I'm going to play it. I'm going to find the song and I'm going to play it.
Yeah, kind of unbelievable that somehow, like, and I don't like to get into people's romantic news over here on the radio, right? But just because of the fact that this represents two left of center political figures inside of Tucson, Arizona, it's made like the front page of like the New York Post at this point. Like, this is like national news breaking this morning that the mayor of South Tucson has this going on. And it even had her baby daddy, Billy Peard, commented in there as well, too, like another activist. And so these are names you know in Southern Arizona politics out here, making the news in New York.
So, Grant, here I thought the only South Tucson news was when I read last night that South Tucson, a one square mile city, I didn't know this. I read this article in Kagan. I put it in the news this morning. They have a 1.5%. Grocery, they call it a home food consumption tax. It's a 1% tax on groceries.
Right, 1.5%.
1.5, I'm sorry. And the thing of it is, they're 1 square mile, so you're actually handicapping any grocery store in that city to, you know, nearly 2%. You're giving anybody, people have to drive less than 1 mile to get to another store, right? And you've now put any store inside your city limits at a 2% competitive disadvantage. So that's what I thought the South Tucson is. Here you have brought me this. So, Grant, you just once again made my day.
I am just here to bring the hot gossip over a hot cup of coffee in the morning. There is really nothing better.
Will there be a feature on Today's show for that?
You know, that's a good question. They might
South
have to
Tucson
pay.
Mayor.
You might not even have to pay to get on the news if you let that one go out there for sure.
Did they wear at least, is de Blasio and these two women, are they at least wearing the shirt with the new branding on it?
Oh, you know,
like Rahina wore to a political protest?
Yeah, that's a very good question. We should get on that one and make sure that Visit Tucson branding makes
product,
its way.
Product placement, guys. You got to do this.
Across the New York Post out there. But South Tucson ties. Of course, South Tucson made the news in this last month when the Food City, the one and only remaining grocery store inside of South Tucson, decided to pack up, basically because of crime. And it's expensive to do business in places where you're customers steal from you. It's a huge line item on a business that has a 1 or 2% profit margin on a good day. So when you add a 1.5% tax, and then you put on, as my friend Josh Jacobson likes to say, the crime tax on top of that, it's overtaxed and just doesn't, quite frankly, have the stones to make it.
I wonder if de Blasio will have some suggestions for them on that.
Very good question. I expect to see him a little more in that 520 over here. I wonder who's next on the market for Bill de Blasio over here going through, maybe Brian Flagg or somebody like this from South Tucson over here. It's hard to say. But why don't we take a quick break and hear from a few great local sponsors. And we come back in honor of Veterans Day. We're going to have Dave Rafis. He's the owner of Combat Coffee Bean, a really great cause and a really great coffee and something that keeps all of us fueled up here in the morning on the Morning Voice. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Krueger and Matt Neely on 1030 AM, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to the Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Krueger, enjoying a proper cup of Combat Coffee Bean right now. But I wanted to take a quick moment of personal privilege before I introduce our next guest from Combat Coffee Bean. And I want to say a moment of praise and thank you for another local business over here that happened to save my dog's life in the last 24 hours. My wife and I, Katarina, love our dogs. We got a pair of boxers, and they're not exactly the smartest dogs out there, the sharpest tools in the shed, as you might say, but they certainly are a lovable and affable pair. And late Sunday night, Katarina comes to me, and our dog Haynes had two small puncture wounds above his eye, and his face began to swell up like a balloon. And of course, this is late Sunday night, right? Like the absolute worst time you could imagine something like this going on. Our local veterinary center was closed, and so we rushed over to Southern Arizona Veterinary and Specialty and Emergency Center, SaveSec. They're located at 7474 East Broadway. And for what I considered to actually be a very reasonable and nominal fee, they were able to give our dog a blood transfusion and two vials of rattlesnake anti-venom and saved Haynes's life. And so for those out there that are concerned that these emergency veterinary clinics are incredibly, incredibly expensive, while this wasn't cheap, it wasn't insane. This wasn't the cost of a new car or something like you might imagine for treatment like that. And they happened to save my best friend's life. And so I just want to say a big thank you to Southern Arizona Veterinary Clinic out there at 7474 East Broadway, because my best friend Haynes means a lot to me. And our next guest over here helps out a lot of veterans with service dogs in a way that means a lot to them too. He happens to be the owner of Combat Bean Coffee, Mr. Dave Rafis. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
Hey, thank you so much for taking time out of your Wednesday to join us here on The Morning Voice.
Well, thank you for having me this morning.
Hey, Matt and I love your coffee. Gets us fired up over here to talk politics, beat up on South Tucson, regular Tucson, unincorporated Pima County, and sometimes even the state of Arizona. That's how much we love Combat Bean Coffee.
There you go. It's always a good thing to be a helpful influence.
Without a doubt. Why don't you give our listeners a little bit background about you and who you are?
Well, I served 7 years in the Marine Corps during Desert Storm. After getting out, I drove truck for about 18 years over the road, and it always cracked me up. My wife was like, "Why is it you don't drink coffee?" And I said, "I do. I just don't drink bad coffee." After retiring, we started the One Veteran Foundation, helping veterans with PTSD get service dogs. When I was diagnosed, there was nobody at that time that provided a service dog at what I felt was a reasonable cost. So we started the foundation. And since then, this month is our 10-year anniversary. We've trained 60-plus service dogs. We haven't had a single suicide with any of our veterans, so they're all still with us, thank God. And then after the Afghan war ended, sadly, they kind of became, for lack of a better term, an afterthought. So people didn't donate to us the way they used to. And that's when the idea for Combat Coffee Bean became an idea for us. And we started with four blends in 2024. We now have over 20 blends, and we donate a portion of every bag of coffee we sell to the One Veteran Foundation to help pay for service dogs, because in my opinion, a veteran should not have to pay for a service dog. And we promote our coffees, we donate to the foundation, and we help supply the service dogs for the veterans.
I love that. What an amazing cause, Dave. I mean, especially coming right after Veterans Day over here too yesterday. So first and foremost, thank you for your service to our country, right? Freedom is not free. We are all here today for citizens like yourself who have made both the ultimate sacrifice and sacrificed many good prime earning years of their lives to defend our freedoms here in the United States. So thank you for your service. And thanks for doing that for our veterans over here. Like, what's the typical cost of a service dog? Like, what does that training cost? What's that worth?
When we started looking 10 years ago, we were like, let's go to California and see if we can buy them there and then bring them here and give them to our veterans. They wanted $30,000 for a service dog. So I'm like, well, I like Florida, I'll drive there. $25,000 for a service dog there. 100% of my nonprofit staff, with the exceptions of our trainers, are all volunteer. So we have built a network over the years of an all-volunteer service, and it costs us about $3,000 a dog.
So, okay, so that's a significant savings compared to, say, $30,000. I mean, that's a 90% off bill over there.
Yeah, we're doing it for about 10% of what others charge. We treat the dogs as if they're in the military. We put them in boot camp. They go to the trainers for approximately 6 to 10 weeks, depending upon how fast the dog learns. And then when they return back to their veteran, they then work with our trainers. And our training process from start to finish will take anywhere between 6 and 9 months. So we do have them on an accelerated process. And all of that is handled by my chairman and my board members. So if somebody is in need of a service dog and have been clinically diagnosed with PTSD, they can reach out to the oneveteranfoundation.org, and that's the number one, veteranfoundation.org, and submit for a request. If they have a dog that we can work with, we will, but our requirements are pretty strict in the form the dog has to be over 40 pounds and between 1 and 3 years of age. And if those dogs qualify for that, then they get set up with an interview. We interview both the veteran and the dog to see if we're going to be a good fit. Sadly, there have been a few that we weren't a good fit for, so we've had to refer them to other places. But for the biggest part of it is making sure the vet is willing to put in the work, because the dogs are the easy part. The vets, because of their situation, some of them will be like, yes, I'm all for this. And then some will be like, gosh, this is more work than I expected. Having a service dog is work, and they have to put in that work. If they do, they go through our program, they graduate. Congratulations, you've completed our program. The dog is yours free of charge.
Wow, yeah. That's a pretty amazing benefit when you think about what just the cost of a trained animal like that is worth, I guess I should say, on the open market. It sounds like they're worth far more than that, though. They're basically invaluable to helping out veterans with PTSD, no?
Yes. Yeah, when we started this, we ended up with my service dog. We went to Pima Animal Control, and when I was a truck driver, I used to rescue Heelers. heelers were the breed that I loved working with.
I love Australian cattle dogs, blue and red heelers. I've had a couple in a row before we had boxers. They're a little bit smarter than the boxers. Huh?
Yeah, they are high energy dogs. If you give them a job, they're absolutely fantastic dogs. If you don't, you have a four-legged terrorist. But we went to Pima Animal Control, wanted to adopt a heeler puppy, found one, and then they told me I couldn't have it because it was on an enforcement hold. And as I was walking out, I found Manifa, and then she became our very first service dog. And because of Manifa, we built the foundation, and we built it around her and moved forward.
Amazing. Well, Dave, why don't we take a quick break over here? When we come back, we're going to have more fascinating conversation with Dave Rafis. He's the owner of Combat Bean Coffee. They are helping out veterans over here with service dogs. Don't go anywhere. A little bit of Veterans Day love on The Morning Voice. You're listening to Grant Kruger and Matt Neely on 10:30 a.m. Your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I do love coffee and tea, quite frankly. I am Grant Kruger, your host. Love to spend Wednesday mornings with you. Every weekday, 7 to 9 a.m., you get The Morning Voice. On Mondays, you've got Lydia Aranda. On Tuesdays, Ted Maxwell from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. He had a great interview with Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie yesterday. If you missed it, you can catch that at kvoi.com and look up the pod. On Wednesdays, you get me, Food for Thought, local restaurants, business development, with just a little dose of politics on the side. On Thursdays, you've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And on Fridays, Dr. Ed Ackerley, bringing you wonders from the University of Arizona. Meanwhile, we are enjoying a great cup of coffee over here with Combat Coffee Bean owner Dave Rafis. Welcome back, Dave.
Thank you.
Hey, this is a great coffee we're having over here. What blend do we have at the Morning Voice today?
Right now, you have the Falcon Fuel, which is from Tanzania. It's grown on Mount Kilimanjaro at the higher altitudes. It gives it that smoother flavor that everybody's looking for. It is a medium roast, and we have several others that are kind of like that. We have coffees that are sourced from all over the world. We have coffee from Brazil, Colombia, Costa Rica, Uganda, Tanzania, Mexico. So we have a lot of very well-blended coffees right now.
It sounds like it. That's pretty awesome. One thing maybe our listeners don't know is that coffee really isn't made inside of the United States. And when we get into the business climate that we're in today, when you talk about tariffs, right, you talk about taxing things that come from outside the United States, business owners such as yourself and myself, when you think of, say, tequila, right, that you can't get in the United States either, like, you've got products like coffee that come from all over the world. How's the tariff situation affecting Combat Coffee Bean?
Well, because of the tariffs, we can no longer absorb the cost of those tariffs, so we have had to have a slight coffee price increase in the form that we can no longer do the free shipping. We have to cover our overhead and things like that, like shipping, picking, the cost to get everything to where it needs to be. So we are doing everything we can do to keep our prices lower, but there's currently a drought in Brazil and in Vietnam where they're not producing coffee to the level that they used to. And according to ICE, which is the International Coffee Exchange.
That's not Immigration and Customs Enforcement over there. Be careful when you say ICE. You know, in Tucson these days, my friend.
Yeah, no, I know. With the International Coffee Exchange, prices have been going up exponentially. With the tariffs on Brazil, which is the number one coffee producer in the world, which is one of the number one beans that are used when you mix and blend coffees. They blend coffees from Brazil, Colombia, and India when you get blended coffees. So those are all things that are affecting the prices. When they put a 50% plus tariff on Brazil, it exponentially raised the prices. So what's happening now is these countries are sending coffee beans to Asia and to Europe because they can make more money. Any business worth anything is going to go where they can make the most money. And these tariffs, while I truly understand why we have them, they are a necessity and need for fair trade across the board. They have increased our coffee prices.
Without a doubt. And it's a difficult situation because I also understand where you're going for with tariffs. I obviously I'd like to see a reciprocal reduction in, say, income tax, which we've only had in the last 100 years to have these tariffs offset that. But there are certain products that you just can't get in the United States. There is no domestic coffee production inside of the U.S. And so we drink a lot of coffee in the United States, right? We get kind of excited about this. There aren't domestic alternatives, I suppose, unless you look for a different caffeinated beverage altogether.
Yeah. No, with coffee, the U.S. doesn't have the climate to grow coffee, and at least quality coffee. So what we do...
US. I mean,
Yeah. So, and then it's one of those situations where you have to go where the product grows. And I look at it in the aspects is that President Trump is doing what he has to do to raise money for this country. And the thing that cracks me up is they create cutouts for other products like aviation parts. Why not coffee? You know, coffee is probably one of the number one consumed products here in America. We are the number one coffee drinking country in the world. And like, if you go to Europe, surprisingly, Denmark drinks more coffee than anybody. In the world, we drink more coffee than anybody. So if they were to put a carve out, and I recommend everybody do reach out to their representatives to put a carve out in there for that, then it'll lower the coffee prices. So these tariffs, they are hurting. They're not destroying yet, but they are hurting them to where I was reading the other day that there are several East Coast and Midwest coffee chains that are filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection because due to the rising price of coffee and poor management, they're having to restructure because people don't have that disposable income right now. And with our customers, a large number of them are government employees. You know, we try to, with our aviation-themed coffee, it's in honor of those that have served. So we do have a large portion of service members that drink our coffee. Well, if they're not getting paid, they can't buy coffee. So hopefully this shutdown ends very quickly. They can get their paychecks and they can start buying coffee again.
Without a doubt. We're having a great conversation over here with Dave Rafis. Dave is the owner of Combat Coffee Bean. And Combat Coffee Bean helps support the One Veteran Foundation that helps provide service dogs to veterans with PTSD. You guys have provided over 60 service dogs, you said?
Yes. In the past 10 years, we've provided over 60 service dogs. We've had zero suicides, and we've had a number of success stories. We had one of our veterans went to medical school and is now a physician assistant. We've had other ones that have become EMTs, nurses, and stuff along that lines. So we're pretty proud of our record.
That's pretty amazing. And you were saying service dogs, to be compatible, they need to be over 40 pounds, between 1 and 3 years of age. Are there specific breeds you guys look for in service dogs, like certain dogs that make better ones than others?
We don't go for breed. We go for bond. We want to make sure that the dog bonds with that veteran because that's the most important thing. And we have had a tremendous amount of luck with pit bulls and huskies. We've had a couple German Shepherds come through.
Sure, very smart dogs too, of course.
Yeah, but like I said, we've had pit bulls get a really bad rap, but they're nanny dogs. And they're very lovable. They're very kind. They're very good at sensing what's going on with the person near them. So all the dogs are trained for emotional awareness, for the PTSD, the anxiety, the depression. They can sense when somebody is about to become depressed or about to have an anxiety attack or a panic attack, because dogs can pick up over 100,000 different smells. And when the human body has a hormone change for their emotions, so say they're about to have an anxiety attack, their hormones will change in their body. The dogs can smell that change, and then the dog goes to that veteran and they do something as simple as petting the dog and taking their attention from where it was going to the dog. And it disrupts that thought pattern. So therefore, something as simple as petting the dog calms them down, and then the panic attacks become fewer and fewer and fewer.
I love it. There is something very therapeutic about petting a dog. I know when I come home from an 18-hour day in the restaurant, like being greeted by my pair of best friends out there, that when I arrive at home, no matter what hour of the night it is, late, early, whatever, it's like the best thing that happened in their entire world they show up to greet you over there. And it's such a great feeling to have that bond, that emotional connection with your best friend like that. And it's really awesome thing, Dave, that you're bringing that to our veterans as well, too.
Yes, and that's why we do have the coffee company, is to be able to help keep this nonprofit going. In the 10 years, I've sadly seen nonprofits come and go, which happens daily. So the fact that we made it 10 years, I am very happy about that. A little surprised, because when we started this, it kind of started with just an idea of me sitting on the couch going, hey, there's nobody here. We could do this. And now, thankfully, there are an abundance of service dog trainers here in town, which are helping out our veterans. And people are like, well, don't you get jealous? And I'm like, the more people we have doing this, the more veterans we can help. And that's what it's about. It's not about me. It's about helping our veterans.
I love it. I think that's a great place to take another quick break over here. Hear from some great local sponsors that help make AM radio possible. At KVOI, we love talking all things local over here. We're going to have one more segment with Dave Rafis, Combat Coffee Bean, coming up. We're going to talk about where you can help out and where you can get that great coffee. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant and Dave on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news. And
the incomparable Julie London. Just like he said, we don't grow it here, do we, Grant?
Not yet. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. Matt Neely, you are always coming up with the music hits, thematically aligned with our guests over here. And speaking of our guests, we've got one more segment with Mr. Dave Rafis. He's the owner of Combat Coffee Bean. We're talking all things great coffee this morning on The Morning Voice, one of my favorite beverages. Keeps us moving over here at KVOI. So how many different types of coffee do you have available on your website?
Right now, we have approximately 20-plus different coffee offerings. We have some flavored coffees, like we are just now releasing our Christmas Carol coffee to get ready for the holiday seasons. We have pumpkin spice, which we do carry all year round. But we have a number of medium roast, light roast, dark roast, and we also have our Eagle Espresso for the espresso drinkers out there.
Ooh, I love a good espresso over there. That's fantastic.
Yeah. We've got, this one is a blend of 6 different beans from around the world that makes up our espresso.
Very cool. Now, these coffees aren't available at a brick and mortar right now, right? But you do some farmers markets?
Yes. Yeah. So right now, they can go online to the combatcoffeebean.com, and that's our website where they can order their coffee and have it delivered to their house. And we are now at the Foothills Community Market at the old Foothills Mall on Saturdays and Sundays from 10 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon, where we bring out bags of whole bean coffee. And should somebody not have a grinder, we do have our commercial grinder there, and we can grind it fresh right in front of them.
Oh, that's so cool. So you can grind it to order, like right at that moment, and I can take home fresh Combat Coffee Bean.
Yes, when we tell people we have the freshest coffee, we mean it, because when somebody orders it, they will pull it in the green bean form, they'll put it in the roasters, they'll roast it right then, they'll bag it, tag it, and ship it in the same day. So you're getting the freshest, fresh roasted coffee you can get, and it's delivered to your door.
Very cool. How many of those 20 plus flavors can I get at, say, the farmer's market out there? Are you bringing all 20?
No.
You can't possibly have all
no,
of them.
No, we will generally have a light roast, a medium roast, and a dark roast. And occasionally we do have our breakfast blend coffees, which one of them is called the Foundation. It's a breakfast blend with extra Indonesian Robusto beans mixed with it. So it gives it that extra caffeine punch. And then we, like I said, we have it in whole bean form. If they don't have that, we can grind it in front of them. And I like to have fun with them, because like when I open the bag, I let them get a smell of this awesome coffee. And then after we grind it for them, they fall in love with the bag. They fall in love with the coffee.
I love it. And so this is available 24/7 online, or basically the farmer's market on Saturdays and Sundays right now.
Yes.
Are you looking to spread Combat Coffee Bean into other locations?
Right now, we are looking to get them into local restaurants, hotels, small businesses. So if anybody has a small business or a restaurant that would like to have the best coffee, I feel, around, then all they have to do is reach out to us. They can do that through our website at thecombatcoffeebean.com. There will be a small pop-up. They can fill it out. I will get it, and we will be back in touch with them to ensure that we get them what they're looking for.
Very cool. Do you guys have other social media avenues as well, too?
Yes, we are on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. We have a lot of information on those sites that we put out daily. And we try to keep everybody up to date with news as we get it, because I try to be very transparent with individuals coming to us. I believe honesty is the best policy, and I update them with stuff on tariffs, what's going on with the coffee beans. We're going to be putting out short videos on social media about where the beans are sourced and the coffee that goes with that type of bean.
Very cool. And Combat Coffee Bean donates a portion of your proceeds of every bag of coffee to One Veteran Foundation. One more time, tell our listeners about One Veteran Foundation.
So we donate a portion of every coffee bag that we sell to the One Veteran Foundation, which is a local nonprofit that provides PTSD service dogs for veterans. We've been doing it 10 years now, and we haven't had a single suicide. So if people want to learn more about that, they can go to the oneveteranfoundation.org. That's the number oneveteranfoundation.org, and you can learn more about the One Veteran Foundation also.
I love it. Dave, thank you so much for taking time out of your Wednesday morning to join us over here on The Morning Voice. And a big thank you for your service as well to our country on the day after Veterans Day over here. I just have to say a big thank you for your service in the Gulf War, sir.
No, well, thank you.
And so, listeners, get out there. Check out the combatcoffeebean.com for some delicious coffee over here. Matt and I are enjoying some of the Falcon Fuel
right now.
We're going to bring you a whole nother Falcon-fueled hour of Morning Voice goodness coming up after the break. I'm going to have some restaurant news, some openings and closings of things popping up over here in the Old Pueblo. Lots of fun local news with Matt and I coming up after the break. Mr. Dave Rafis, it has been a pleasure to get to spend part of Wednesday morning with you and caffeinate with you, sir.
Oh, well, thank you. Caffeine is always a good thing.
Without a doubt. Let's end on that one. Cut to some local sponsors over here that help make local radio possible. Thank you for advertising. Reach out to us if you are looking to advertise on The Morning Voice. We do appreciate that one. In another hour with Mr. Neely and myself coming up after the break on 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. This is Hour 2. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Love talking local news and talk with you every Wednesday morning, 7 to 9 a.m. On Hour 2, I'd love to bring you local restaurant news, things that are happening in our culinary community here in Tucson. And of course, there's always lots going on, but especially this time of year, right? This is our high season. This is the time it's great to sit outside. Well, at least until maybe this weekend, Matt. Looks like it's going to get a little bit chillier out there this weekend. Our 3 weeks of fall might be coming to an end.
The heat gets, as I always say, my dad always said also, the heat gets all the publicity here.
Without a doubt, but it's the cold that like really bums us all out. Like we're really enjoying this nice fall weather right now. I kind of don't want this one to end. But starting off on a bit of a negative note, there is a restaurant closure right on Congress. As the world turns on Congress Street, the National, located at 98 East Congress, had been open for about a year and some change, has announced that it's closing. It's the former Wig-O-Rama location right on the corner. They had unskinned that building, if you remember, revealing its beautiful brick underlayment that had been furred over many times over in the 60s and 70s and 80s in various attempted beautification processes. And so that owner, Patricia Schwabe, out of Peach Properties, had announced that they're closing mid last week, and that Los Miles Winery out of Elgin is going to take the location. This will be their first tasting room, and it's set to open up on January 5th. So that's a pretty quick turnaround over there, you know, inside of 60 days to get that one turned around. So I imagine they're just taking over even possibly the existing liquor license to make it happen that quickly. But a new winery or wine tasting room opening up at 98 East Congress in 2 months, and that will be Los Milex. They're out of Elgin. They make a great award-winning product. They've been doing it since 2018. So I'm excited to see that one pop over here. What also popped up on Congress without any announcement on Halloween night, without any fanfare on social media, is another bar as well, too, located just down the block on Congress. It's the former location of the Good Oak Bar, immediately west of the Rialto Theater. Sure. And it's a new bar concept called Stage Left. Stage Left has been there now for about 10 days. I guess they're probably on day 11 right now doing the math. And they've obviously done a real quiet sort of soft opening. And I get it. In the middle of season, sometimes you don't want a supercharged opening. And so this might be one of the first announcements that they're even there and doing it. I just happen to be right across the block from them over there at the former Hi-Fi Kitchen and Cocktail Space, whose liquor license we got approved as well.
I was going to circle back and ask you if I hope I didn't do anything to impede your liquor license getting approved from last Wednesday's show.
No, you never know. Sometimes I open up my trap on the radio over there. It makes you wonder. But we made it through getting past the gatekeepers of humanity in the city.
You associate
council
with Matt Neely? We need some extra review of your license.
Yes. No, we got a 6-0 vote over there. The mayor was, of course, off in Brazil. And so the remaining city council voted 6-0 to forward us over to the state for approval. And so now the state takes a look at your liquor licenses. They start with the local guys and they go, look, if they know you and they don't like you, we're not even going to bother with your license. And so we've got past the locals and we're waiting on the state. Really excited to get that one going. Tucson Foodie just dropped a piece about us this morning. If you want to take a peek at TucsonFoodie.com, they always do a great job, Shane Reiser, in helping you bring the latest restaurant gossip as well, too. But as I tell you guys, I always pick it up from the liquor license applications as well, too, because it's a very public process, and that's how we learn what's happening in the Old Pueblo. As well, new ownership of Borderlands Brewery, their last remaining location, Tucson and 6. A former minor partner and chef, Jose Delgado, has completely taken over the place, and they've begun to remodel it and retool it, and they're going to keep it open under the Borderlands name. They're not brewing Borderlands beer currently right now. They've been talking about subcontracting that brewing out to a Phoenix-based brewery, but they are working hard to retool and redecorate that place and keep that one going. So we're excited to see Borderlands kind of hang on over here after having a really rough summer in closing both their downtown location, somewhat infamously, of course, to a live music or a live comedy club that also didn't quite seem to make it. And then they closed their River and Craycroft location as well, too. And so I was getting pretty worried about the 6th and Tucson spot. But it sounds like they've got some fresh energy, perhaps some fresh money, a little bit of fresh blood in there, and Borderlands is keeping on. And okay. So we are wishing them a great deal of success. Obviously, there's a lot happening on that corner, 6th and Tucson, right? Between, of course, the Sonoran House, between Redbird, there's that new speakeasy, you know, Old Pueblo club that opened up behind Sonoran House as well, too, in the last couple of weeks. And then you've got this retooled Borderlands. You've got Tumerico
right there. Sure.
Like, that's a pretty hot corner to keep your eye on. I know there's a lot of construction over there. It just seems to be going on in perpetuity, right? When we talked to the owner of Redbird, he was like, yeah, it's going to be going on for another couple of years. Right. And I was like, what?
Huh?
Like, we're going to have to talk to Ted and the RTA next and see if we can't expedite that process and fix up 6th and Tucson in some capacity.
You get your liquor license approved so we can speak freely.
Yes, we're in the tree of trust over here on the Morning Voice right now, Matt. We can now speak freely that one. As well, Salad Nation, we had Omar Solorzano on a few months ago talking about his concept, Salad Nation. They're supposed to be opening up next week, finally, at their Oracle and Orange Grove location, right where the parish is. So keep your eyes out on social media on that one. Go out there and support Omar. I'm sure he's scrapping to try to get that one open right now, because every day you're missing a restaurant season, like you are missing some opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so I am sure they are going to get this open in just the next week or so. So I'm keeping my eyes on that location, hoping for them to have a successful opening. They've closed their location, as we said before, in the Park Place Mall, mm-hmm. kind of continuing just the bad luck of mall restaurants out there. It seems like even local ownership that is working hard and present there every day and bringing a high quality product just can't survive the overall doldrums of the economic turndown for malls in general. Mm-hmm. And so let that exist for a warning as future operators out there listening and thinking about future locations. Not that it should be breaking news over here, as we say on AM radio, that malls are dying, but like, it doesn't seem to be working out so well for food locations.
Right.
What did work out well is El Charro got a loud national press, as we talked about in the first hour. Savannah Guthrie did an 8-minute piece on social media about Tucson, Arizona, her hometown, and she got to go visit the U of A, and they had her old, she showed up to her old sorority, and they took her, you know, with the pride of Arizona, stomping down the U of A mall, had some beautiful shots, and they also got to go to El Charro restaurant. So El Charro did a great job of getting themselves some really big national press out there. Of course, the C. Charro concepts have been around for 100 years, and so that is worth some national press when you think about anybody surviving 100 years in the restaurant business. Mm-hmm. As I say, you survive 10 and we're hanging that jersey from the rafters. Right. You survive 100 and you are deep into the Hall of Fame. They're probably putting a statue of you in front of the Pima County Health Department in some capacity if you make it that long. So cheers to El Charro for getting that press. That is great for them. The C. Charro brands have done a great job, of course, of associating themselves with the University of Arizona, too, right? You see their product on the mall for those home games at that Bear Down Bash, right? Like, they're always present for these sort of things. And we love our U of A sports, right? There was a U of A basketball game last night at McHale. We got to take it to the Northern Arizona Lumberjacks.
Thrashed the Lumberjacks.
Yes, we did, 84-49 in a real beating of the Lumberjacks. We don't feel as bad for those guys after they beat us in football a few years ago.
Yeah,
so we're still
right.
Sticking it to them, you know.
You Lumberjacks have axes. Well, we have hatchets in Tucson.
Yes, so take that. And so that the hatchets outdid the axes quite a bit. 84.
You chop down trees. We steal copper wires.
Yeah.
So.
And so the U of A has got a big game coming up, the basketball we're talking over here. Big game coming up this Friday against UCLA, right, at the Intuit Center. Another
neutral site game.
Yes, yeah, playing UCLA, of course, a longtime rival when we were in the Pac-10 and Pac-12. And so it's kind of nice to have another shot at the Bruins over there and have two big hallowed West Coast programs go toe-to-toe on national TV, both ranked. You know, Arizona's moved up quite a bit in the rankings after beating Florida last week. We're number 5, and so that's pretty great to see. Everyone's excited about that. And we've got a road game for the Wildcats on Saturday at 10 o'clock in the morning against the Cincinnati Bearcats.
Yeah, our 6-3 also a ranked team.
Yep, they're ranked number 22, I want to say, and so they're top 25. We're 6-3. We're bowl eligible, and we're taking a ranked team on the road. This is going to be a big test of the Wildcats. If we could win out against Cincinnati, and then the next week, home, our last and final home game against Baylor. And then, of course, our final game against the, I think they're called Tempe Normal is the name of that university up in Tempe. And when we play those guys, you know,
State Teachers College, right?
Yes, yes. And so if we play those guys, we could be 9-3. I know that maybe I'm getting in front of my skis over here just a little bit, but it's possible. And so I'm pretty excited for the university to have that one popping up over here. And then one more breaking news that just broke at 8 o'clock this morning. The act for the Tucson Conquistadors concert, now known as the CQ Fest, that their concert that they're going to be having at the Rito Downs, right? That main headlining artist on Friday, March 20th, is going to be Lady A. And so that's Lady Antebellum. They'll be playing here on Friday, March 20th, just announced at 8 o'clock this morning. So we're 13 minutes into that breaking news. So pretty excited.
Should be a fantastic show.
Yeah. Country has been a big draw for those concerts for a number of years. As we saw Boots in the Park just a couple of weeks ago, drew almost 9,000 people to the Rito Downs. And of course, October is a great time to do an outdoor festival, CQ Fest, happening now on March 20th. Also, I'm no meteorologist over here, no junior Chuck George, but I'm going to call that one ahead of time that we should have better weather, you know, and it's a pretty nice time of year. We didn't quite get that one for the Vanilla Ice concert last year as it was coming in.
It was ice.
Yes.
It was.
Without a doubt, it was really icy out there as well, too. But either way, the Lady A concert announced just this morning, and so we're excited about that. Anytime people can bring great new events, great things happening to the old Pueblo, cool stuff that's only happening here, you got to salute it. You got to go out there and support that. Let's take a quick break over here and support some local advertisers. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the Dust Music Festival happening this weekend. That Greek Festival is happening as well, too, on Friday. So much going on in the old Pueblo. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Morning Voice on 10:30 a.m. You're home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice on this Wednesday, November 12th episode. You know, we are 50 years now at the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald, November 10th, 1975. 29 souls lost their lives. And what was probably the most famous shipwreck in Midwestern, you know, Great Lakes history over there. Something that I kind of follow quite a bit. I know as you get older, you get into either World War II history or bread or beer making or gardening. But Midwestern shipwrecks is something that I've been interested in. And this one has a lot of meaning for those in the Midwest, right? Like Mariner's Church happens to be located right on Jefferson, right on the Detroit River over there where they have services every year on November 10th. So remember those 29 souls that were lost on the Edmund Fitzgerald, one of the largest and deadliest shipwrecks, the deadliest in Great Lakes history over there at Lake Superior, Whitefish Point, and some pretty, pretty tough areas out there. Amazing to think that this is part of the United States where we have lakes big enough to sink ships. And so 50-year anniversary of that sinking over there just happened a couple days ago, and I thought I'd bring that one up. The lyrics of that song from Gordon Lightfoot always ring heavy with me when they talk about Lake Superior, as you said, never gives up her dead when the gales of November come early, right? And I feel like that's happening this weekend over here in the old Pueblo. Our gales of November seemingly are going to be coming up on Friday and Saturday and Sunday out here, right?
Yeah. Well, it's amazing you brought up the song. Of course, the story is it's I don't know if the word's legend, but it's obviously a hugely tragic story. It was a huge story then, and looking back, it's still a major event in maritime history for America. From the song standpoint, it's interesting that Lightfoot was inspired by a couple of news accounts that he had seen, and I've seen a lot of stuff, obviously, on social media in the last few days. They had been recording all day, and he had been toying with the song for a while. He gave minimal direction to the band. They played it through. He just said, well, come in, you know, you'll know when to come in, that kind of stuff. I mean, to the various members of the band. He sat there with a 12-string guitar. They did this on one take. The first take of the song was the one ultimately, even though they recorded it several times over the next week or two, they ended up going with the first kind of unrehearsed take. And that's the one that made it to the single. And of course it bucked the trend of AM radio and a 3-minute hit, you know, being a 6-minute, a ballad, you know? So the song, like a lot of songs, has an element of spontaneity to it. And sometimes if you overwork something to death, it kind of gets washed out. That was the first take of the song, and that's the one they ended up using. Great story. I read another account that he would occasionally make visits to the Maritime Church, and he would, one time they were, the choir would perform the song on the anniversary, and one time, unbeknownst to most of the congregation, he was invited up. He was in the audience, and they knew he was in the audience, at least the reverend there, or the clergy member, and so they brought him up, and he actually sang the song with the thing. So he was a frequent visitor. If he was in town, he would go there and check it out. So obviously tragic story for the 29 who were aboard, huge storm, and God rest their souls.
Without a doubt. So 50 years of, the history of the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald going down in American maritime lore, for sure.
And I'm not sure if I have my facts straight on this, but I believe I read that the Canadian government, because it's on the Canadian side of the waters or whatever, obviously it's considered a grave. And so I think, and I don't know if this is true, but I think there's been minimal kind of exploration of it to see to get to the bottom of what actually happened, right? So it's still a mystery after a half century.
Right. Scuba divers actually have gotten down there. It's in over 500 feet of water. Right. I'm an avid PADI certified scuba diver, lived in Mexico for a long time. Yeah, you need Trimix to get down there. I mean, 500 feet is insane. Yes. Like, this is beyond any depths of recreational scuba diving. And of course, it's incredibly, incredibly chilly, even in the summer in Lake Superior over there. And so a preserved gravesite indeed, and very well protected, as are many maritime shipwrecks, particularly in the Midwest, because they stay so preserved in that anaerobic state in very cold, fresh water. They actually don't decompose in the same way. And so many of these old boats are still pretty intact down there, where in the ocean, they wouldn't have survived that long as well, too. Well, why don't we shift gears over here? I didn't get to, at our first segment, I didn't get to bring up some local breaking news that has to do with KVOI. And that is a former KVOI host over here, Chris DeSimone, has announced his candidacy for the Oro Valley Town Council. And I think that's pretty neat. Got to see Chris on social media, filled out his paperwork right after our elections ended last year, or, you know, at the end of this year. He's getting ready for next year's race. And so he's going to take a stab at the OV Town Council. And I think that's pretty interesting. Could be a neat slate over there. Oops, we've got a caller on the line. Matt, why don't we go over to line one over here?
Charles, you're on.
Thanks. An update. There were only two people that ever scuba dived to the Fitz, and they set a world record in doing it that still has not been broken as far as depth. You're right. It's 534 feet, and they did it without assistance of a submersible or any tender or tether. It was a 6-minute dive to the Fitz, and then it was a 3-hour decompression on the way up. But it was done on the QT. They didn't announce it until after they'd already done it. And as a result, the Canadian government passed legislation, and no one's been able to even scan it. You can't direct a scan within 500 yards of the wreck of the Fitz to this very day because of that incident.
Wild. Thanks for calling in, Charles, for that interesting update over there. What an interesting and sad time in American history, no?
Yeah, both of those guys are still around. One of them's named Mike Z, and I forget the other guy's name, from Chicago. I've been trying to get him on and interview him, talk about that dive. They didn't video it very well. They didn't really have very much photography on it. It's hard to find a camera that'll actually survive that depth. And that when they got the bell off the Fitz, they actually used a relatively new invention, a type of diving suit that leaves the diver at ambient at surface pressure, so that he didn't have to worry about decompression when they got the bell off the Fitzgerald. And that bell is in the Whitefish Point Museum, the actual bell off the Fitz.
Very cool. I'd love to go see that someday.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, Charles Heller, for calling
Good call.
In for
Thanks,
a little
Charles.
Edmund Fitzgerald history over there as well, too. Switching gears again, Chris DeSimone running for Oro Valley Town Council. I'm really excited for this race, right? It sounds like Mark Napier is going to run for mayor. Chris is going to run for town council over here. I'd love to see more economic development happen at the Oro Valley Town Council. You may recall a couple of years ago, I was out there at the town council meeting stumping for the developers from the Oro Valley Marketplace to get a rezoning and a redevelopment of that area. And I think it would be great for Tucson to do so. You've got a mall that was built 20 some odd years ago by Vestar in a very antiquated manner designed for big box stores. It's time to change that, get some mixed use in there, do the same kind of things that they're
doing.
Is this the
one with the road kind of meandering through it? Is this the one we're thinking of?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Tangerine and Oracle over there as well, too. And so it would be great to see a business friendly town council get in there and let those developers really take a big stab at making something awesome in Oro Valley. Well, don't go anywhere. We've got a whole nother half an hour of the Morning Voice coming up. Lots more local news and talk. You're listening to Grant Kruger and Matt Neely on 10:30 a.m. The Voice. Welcome back to the Morning Voice. Matt, you're always bringing it hyper local with those tunes over there. I didn't know there were so many songs that had Tucson or coffee in them. I'm impressed by your ability. Thoroughly impressed. I'm not mad.
No.
I'm impressed. This is pretty great stuff
over
here. After
the breaking news this morning, I couldn't resist, so I'm sorry, but there we go.
Hey, so speaking of Tucson and cool things happening out here this weekend, besides for just the U of A games that we talked about, there's a lot going on. You've got the Greek Festival, right? On Friday, downtown Jacome Park. We had Peter on last week talking about all the neat things that are available to go help out St. Demetrios Greek Church. There's going to be Greek dancing. There's an amazing Greek artist playing. There's going to be great food. And that is this Friday, rain or shine. And speaking of rain or shine, the Dusk Music Festival, also in the exact same property, yeah. exact same stage, the following Saturday and Sunday. Now, this is more of an electronic music festival in general, yeah. right? So you've got G-Eazy, Enzo, Loud Luxury, De Oro, and Levity all playing. And so, you know, this is going to be a big-time draw for U of A students. You can expect up to 10,000 people showing up for the Dusk Music Festival Fantastic. On Saturday and Sunday as well, too. So really, really happen in time in the Old Pueblo. If a culinary dining event is more your speed, the Tucson City of Gastronomy has the Teruño Flavors of the Desert Festival at Tejano Chul Park. Instead, that's Sunday the 16th, 3 to 7 p.m. Tickets are available at TejanoChul.org. And that's going to be a very Tucson City of Gastronomy, Tucson foodie kind of event going on over there as well, too. So if that's more your speed, that's happening Sunday as well, too. So a big, big weekend here in Tucson.
Grant, do you know what takes the chill off of a chilly, possibly rainy day?
What might that be, sir?
Flaming cheese.
Yes.
So I'm going to get some Saganaki, and that's gonna take the chill off of the air.
I love it. I will be down there as well, too, Super. On Friday, helping out Katarina. She's got a Shop Cleo pop-up All at right. the Greek Festival as well, too. So our ladies can shop over there and enjoy some delicious Greek food and entertainment. Excited to see the Greek Festival coming back after really a pretty long hiatus. And so do go out there and support that one. That's TucsonGreekFestival.com for those looking for tickets. Now, the city of Tucson has all kinds of things going on downtown, including a meeting today at the Planning Commission's public hearing at City Hall at 6 p.m. We were warned about this meeting by City Council candidate Jay Tolkoff a few weeks ago when he was on our show. He said, you know, they moved this meeting until after the election on
right,
purpose. This is the meeting on middle housing. For those not keeping score at home, the state legislator passed a law saying that unless the city has some plan by the end of the year, starting in January of 2026, these less aggressive housing regulations are going to apply. And essentially, if the city doesn't come up with a plan within a 1 mile radius of its central business district, a lot of high density housing can occur in that area. So the city has to come up with a plan or be subject to the state law on January 1st. And so they moved this hearing, which was scheduled for the 15th, if I remember, of October, mm-hmm. until today at 6 p.m. And oddly enough, the city is limiting participation to 60 people as well, too, and they want you to RSVP for this one. Mm-hmm. So do go to the city's website and take a peek at this one. If this is of interest to you, this might be something you do want to pay attention to. These are those kind of meetings that the city tells you, hey, we had a public hearing located on, you know, way at this council office somewhere deep on the east side that you haven't heard of and didn't know, but it was in the corner of this website. And so we asked you about mm-hmm. this. And so we just made up our plan with public input. Mm-hmm. But public input is being both limited, delayed, and there's a short window of time for implementation. If they don't get this done by New Year's, there's just a far less restrictive state law that's going to apply. And you're going to end up with a lot of two and fourplexes in your backyards in Midtown and Armory Park and other neighborhoods located within 1 mile of the central business district that is defined by basically downtown Tucson. I don't think it's worth on a radio show going over the exact boundaries over here with that one. But they're going to be subject to a less restrictive zoning. So get out there, City Hall, 6 p.m. today for those activists or developers that want to take advantage of that one.
Always makes you nervous, right? When they say if no action, this horrible thing's going to happen. Like, you know, it's like, well, things will stay the same and we're going to vote or we're going to have a planning session on whether or not things will change. No, it's like, it's a poison pill set to go off. Like if we don't have any action on this, like this huge change to the zoning will go through.
Without a doubt. And speaking of horrible things happening over here, the city of Tucson is also planning on potentially putting on an ad tax and an increased bed tax on Visit Tucson in Pima County.
Yep.
So there may be a tax on your advertising, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, quite frankly. Businesses need to advertise.
So they can generate revenue that's government taxes.
Yeah, well, of course, I understand why taxes exist over here. But
the reason they advertise is to make money so they can give some of it to the city. And the city says, no, we're going to take some off of the front end, too.
Yes, the front
of your
and
business
the back
development
end over here. And so
we're going to handicap your business development.
So there's both a potential ad tax and an increase on the bed tax. The bed tax is currently $4 per bed per night in Tucson, right? And they want to make that $5. Now, it only sounds like $1, but that's 25%, Matt.
So again, so we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. The bed tax goes to Visit Tucson. Visit Tucson pays people to do this branding for Tucson, and then the mayor basically takes that brand hot off the press to a political rally and says, you know, anybody that votes Republican isn't welcome in Tucson. And I'm like, well, you know, that, like, it almost seems counterproductive to the use of tourism dollars.
Right. And then if you weren't upset enough that you were paying more money inside the city of Tucson, they're also exploring, and they just put this out in a study session on their last meeting on November 5th. So this is pretty hot off the press, my latest morning voice since that city council meeting. They announced that they're exploring the possibility of raising both the parking fees and meters, raising the fees in garage, they're now charging up till 7 p.m. on weekdays, including Saturdays, but also charging on Sundays and making that all the way up until 10 p.m.
It's going to hurt new employees.
Now, they just raised those fees and time periods very recently, in like the last few months, and they're looking at digging a little deeper into that well. Now, I would suggest the following. As somebody that has railed on parking rules on more than one occasion on this show, they're making a mistake by making the garages more expensive. I'm actually okay with them making the meters more expensive. I believe that the meters are the most desirable spaces in all of Tucson. Mm-hmm. You have these 50 parking spaces on Congress, right, that we basically saved by in our construction of the modern streetcar that the businesses fought for that cost $1 an hour, $1.25 an hour to park right in front of a business downtown. It's actually too cheap. That's probably 3 or 4x less than what the market value is of those spaces. And in many cases, the garages, which are further away and a little less convenient than those spaces, cost the same or even more. And you've created a negative incentive that if the garage costs more money than the really awesome right in front of, you know, Charo's Steak, I can park my car space. Well, I'm going to drive around downtown looking for that serotonin hit of finding an open parking space or a meter that's already got some bucks into it. Mm-hmm. Because not only have I got a cheaper space and I've saved, right, I've also saved myself some time and hassle on the walk. And so I hypothesize that a large portion of our traffic on Congress and Broadway downtown is actually driving around looking for that dopamine hit of saving on that cheap parking space rather than having the garages cost a little less money. Sure. So I'm okay with charging more for those street spaces because then they'll be likely to actually be open. And the hurried up emergency user that's willing to pay $4 or $5 for that to park there for 1 hour because they absolutely don't want to be inconvenienced can do so. And now you've actually created an incentive for people to park in the garage that it's cheaper and it's covered too, right? Mm-hmm. And that's worth something in Tucson as well, at least for, you know, 5 of the months of the year. Shade
Yeah,
it might dictate the best parking space. And so forget the economics of the tax. I think the economics of having the garage be cheaper than the street spaces would actually create an incentive for people to just immediately go to the garage and not waste time and add to Tucson's downtown traffic by circling around looking for that hot dopamine hit of a savings of finding an already filled up meter or perhaps an open space on the street. That's just me. I'm no parking planner. I'm just a simple restaurateur over here. But this one makes sense to me. We're staring down the barrel of a metered world up until 10 p.m., and that could include Sundays as well, too. And all of that is to keep the modern streetcar subsidy extra subsidized.
Again, all these things, the ad tax, all these things, all these, they call them revenue enhancements, and the parking thing, they said, oh, that's to fund some sort of special walkability, you know, Mobility Tucson, or it was I had it on the news a couple of days ago, that they want to make downtown more walkable and safe for pedestrians. And I'm like, well, how is taking more people's money, like making it safe? But again, what it all gets back to, Grant, is they've got a $20 million, at least a $20 million hole in their budget, or $15 million, whatever, that's going out, that because they have zero fare box on their transit system, bus, right, streetcar, you know, whatever. So
it's the subsidy on top of a subsidy, Matt. We're making, yes, something that already was subsidized. Again,
right,
$70 million a year cost, $12 million a year in revenue on a good day. Right? It was already subsidized. And so we're going to subsidize your subsidy in the same way that maybe we talk nationally about healthcare, you know, and these benefits during COVID, that the Obamacare subsidies, yeah, that are also going away. Yeah. Like, you subsidize a subsidy, and at some point, people just have to, quote unquote, pay their fair share.
And subsidizing the subsidy has, free bus fares has devalued a bus ride for people. It's devalued it. Okay. And, you know, the mayor is clung, to quote the former president, you know, who said people were clinging to their guns and Bibles. She's clung to her story that free bus fares have not attracted crime to the bus system. I beg to differ, politely, but respectfully, beg to differ on that. But she, you know, a lot of people have made the argument, and I'm one of them, that by paying the subsidy, it's actually made things worse. It's a German phrase, Schlimmbesserung. It's an improvement that makes things worse. And I think that's what this ended up being. And now they're looking to take more money from people in order to pay it.
Yep.
Well,
get out there. Go to City Hall today if you're upset by these particular zoning changes. Get out there and make public comments about this parking downtown. Otherwise, you're going to be staring down the barrel of 7-day-a-week parking increases downtown. There are meetings going on about the RTA. That's our next election. We got to get out there and be involved locally if you want to make a change in the old Pueblo. Why don't we cut to break over here, Matt? We've got one more segment of the Morning Voice coming up after the break. Maybe we'll talk a little 50-year mortgage. Mortgages. I wonder if that'll help out the Tucson, Southern Arizona home market.
That kind of works for me, Grant.
Welcome back to the final segment of the Morning Voice. I like it, Matt. You are a great DJ over here and a great partner on KVOI. A quick point of personal privilege. I wanted to say thank you to Bill Buckmaster, 37 years in the broadcasting business, 15 here at KVOI.
Yeah, 37 in Tucson. And I mean, I remember as a kid, I've talked to him. He was in Vegas working radio. He filed stories that went out over the national news about Howard Hughes. He was there when Howard Hughes passed away, and I believe as a young lad, I heard him on radio in Phoenix. Some of the stories that he filed from Las Vegas about the whole bit with the Howard Hughes will and all that story. That story went on for years in Vegas, but he was in Vegas. He was on television in the Bay Area, TV news presenter. So his career goes back decades, and 37 of those years here in Tucson.
Yeah, I just want to say a big thank you to Bill Buckmaster over there. He's got his noon show here on KVOI until the end of the year,
yeah,
but an absolute titan of local media, and he's hanging up his microphone, at least over the radio part. He might do a little podcasting or
freelance work, sure.
Yeah, I love it. But I think he's going to get to enjoy that retirement. It must be quite a grind to have had a noon deadline 5 days a week, you know, to put all that together. So a big salute and a big thank you to a local media icon in Mr. Buckmaster. I saw the Trump administration was looking at doing 50-year mortgages, Matt. And this really shocked me that you could borrow, you know, for this long on something over here.
Sure.
But as a market in Southern Arizona where home building is really one of the only really profitable things that we've got going on down here, right? Blading the desert southeast and the northwest sides of town and turning these, yeah, into fairway frontage, lick 'em and stick 'em homes has sort of been our shtick over the last 30 years. Like, what do you think of a 50-year mortgage possibility?
Well, you said that, so the Trump administration is pushing this. So my quick hot take on this is, when government, any administration starts saying how things should work in the housing business with mortgages, I get really nervous. I go back to 2008, you know, when you had presidential administration saying we need more people to get mortgages, and they came up with creative ways to borrow money. And we all know how that worked out. So I get a little nervous when any government administration agency says this is what we should do with mortgages.
Without a doubt, that's a big mortgage nut there to cover every month and a long period of time too. I'm probably more worried about people financing cars for 72, 84, 96 months because it's such a depreciating asset, right? Homes logically in general go up over time. So on one level you could say, well, you're locking in in this 50-year-old price, right?
Sure.
Thinking of what 50 years ago meant, could we lock down a 1975 price for the city of
Tucson? This is a great point you make. What happens with property taxes in states and cities or states and counties where property taxes locked, like in California from Prop 13, where your property tax is locked to the price you paid for it? 50 years down the road, for somebody that sticks with it for a long time, that could have serious repercussions to local property tax collections.
Without a doubt. I think there's a lot of ramifications of this potential mortgage change. And with realtors, you know, being one of the largest career paths in Southern Arizona, I mean, who doesn't have at least 172 friends that are realtors in some capacity? Like, these are things we got to look out for over here in the Old Pueblo. But I just want to say a thank you to our listeners for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us here on The Morning Voice. It was a great conversation with Dave from Combat Coffee Bean over here helping out those veterans. Get out there to combatcoffeebean.com. Help support service dogs going to our veterans. A great cause, particularly the day after Veterans Day over here. And thank you to all of our veterans who have helped make the freedom that is absolutely not free available to all of us and our listeners over here. Have yourself a great weekend. Get out there. Go to the Greek Festival, Tucson Greek Festival.com and DuskMusicFestival.com. I will see you guys next Wednesday.